Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Attention, young invincibles. You have 12 hours to sign up for health insurance if you want to be covered for all your medical expenses, like, say, spilling that scalding hot cocoa on your surprisingly thin flannel pajamas. I only go by print ads. I have figured that is what young people do. I am Mike Peskin for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. On today's show, we will discuss the Obamacare deadline. We'll also talk about Bill de Blasio's latest appointments, the continuing battle over a living versus a minimum versus a prevailing wage, and why your cell phone pictures may end up in an august British photo journal. But first, today is indeed the deadline to sign up for Obamacare. If you're an individual who wants to be covered on January 1st, this is a movement to channel the spirit of Donald Rumsfeld, because in this discussion, there are a few known knowns, some unknown knowns, a whole lot of known unknowns. Have enough young people signed up? Will the website survive today's presumed flood of traffic? Are insurance companies getting the right information even after someone signs up? And in January, when someone gets sick and walks into a doctor's office, will they be covered? Also, does this look infected? We'll ask that. Well, maybe not the last question, but some of those others, to Susan Page of USA Today. Hello, Susan.
Mike, hi, great to be with you.
Yes, good to be with you too. So we'll talk about the NSA in a second also, but let's talk about the deadline. It's a new deadline. It's a pushed back deadline. The original one was the 15th. The White House just announced that President Obama himself will sign up for the coverage today, even though he has access to military health care because he's the commander in chief. Do they expect tons and tons of people to visit healthcare.gov today?
Man, they hope so. They hope that a lot of people visit, and they hope the website doesn't crash. Because this is kind of a referendum about the Affordable Care Act and whether it's going to work.
Yeah. So we all knew about the audacity of hope. I don't know if that's a business strategy. It seems to be. Let's listen to President Obama in his news conference on Friday. He's talking about the state of the rollout.
The basic structure of that law is working, despite all the problems, despite the website problems, despite the messaging problems, despite all that, it's working. And again, you don't have to take my word for it. We've got a couple million people who are going to have health insurance just in the first 3 months, despite the fact that probably the first month and a half was lost because of problems with the website and about as bad a bunch of publicity as you could imagine. And yet, you still got 2 million people who signed up or more. And so what that means then is that the demand is there, and as I said before, the product is good.
Well, he did document that demand is there. It's that second part of the sentence, the product is good, that is not supported by all the stuff he said before. I mean, I guess the problem is if you can't see the product and you have to just imagine what the product's going to be, you might worry about it. You might not sign up. Do you think that the conversation, though, is shifting from the website and the technical glitches to the product itself?
You know, I don't think it get quite as shifting there yet, because for one thing, there are still some problems with the website. And a day of big demand like what we think today will be, we'll test it. For another thing, we don't know if the back end of the website is working.
Right.
You know, we don't know if when people show up, think they're covered as of January 1st, if the insurance companies will have that same understanding. So I don't think we're past the time when the website demands a lot of attention. It is true that there's clearly a lot of demand for this. And I know I've heard from a lot of friends and people I know who think this is an important thing. This is something that's made it possible for them to think about leaving a job they don't really like or retiring early because they'll still be able to get health care. But I don't think we know for sure that the system itself is going to hold together. You know, what we need is nearly universal coverage to make the provisions of the Affordable Care Act work. And as you pointed out, one of the big questions is, will people who face really only a small fine at this point, if they don't sign up, will they sign up and make the system work?
Yeah, and I don't even think President Obama's most vicious critics would deny the premise that there's a huge demand for health care. So it seems like he's trying to, you know, win an argument that no one is having with him. The proof will be in the pudding, or the proof of the pudding will be in the taste. And if you eat too much pudding, you might not qualify for health care, I suppose.
But it is the Christmas spirit to be eating a lot of pudding,
right.
So it's quite appropriate that way.
Yes, let's stick in our thumb and pull out a plum. So, okay, here's a staff from the New York Times. In Colorado, 43% of the people who are signing up for private plans in the first couple of months were in the 55 to 64 age bracket. In Connecticut, Rhode Island, Washington, it was 40%. California, Kentucky, 35%. So here's the national fact, though. Only about 12% of the population is between 55 and 65, and yet that's where the bulk of the signups are going. So even if the success is within that demographic, that won't be a success for proponents of the ACA, will it?
That's right. So when we have the final numbers, which, you know, we're not going to have, like, at midnight tonight, there won't be announcement of the final numbers. But when we have the final numbers, we need to look not only at the overall numbers, but also at the kind of mix of people who signed up. And that's why there's so much focus on people under 30 who will have to pay a price but won't be using the services as much because they tend to be healthier. And here's the question. Is this something that's going to resolve itself because young people may feel less urgency about signing up? They may wait till the last minute. I've got two kids in their 20s. Let me tell you, they wait till the last minute to do things.
Yeah.
Is that what is happening? Or have they decided, I don't understand this. I don't really need this. I think I'll just ignore this.
Yeah. And we've had a couple of deadlines pushed back. Maybe they're saying, oh, come on, how serious can it be? But I want to ask everyone in our listening audience, if you have personal experiences trying to sign up for the health insurance, or are you looking down the barrel of that January 1st deadline? Our number is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Especially, we would like to hear from people whose states refer them to healthcare.gov. So New York's exchange is going well. I actually logged on and got a number, and I'm not going for it, but I just went to see how it would work. Worked well for me. What about New Jersey? If you're living in New Jersey, you got to rely on healthcare.gov. Again, the number, 212-433-WNYC. Zeke Emanuel is on the ACA team. He's Rahm Emanuel's brother. He says that you can't judge the effectiveness until 2015. All right, that may be fair. It seems unrealistic in our current political climate. It also seems to be saying that if it is a disaster by 2015, it'll kind of be too late to pull up stakes on it, right?
Right, exactly. The answer of an academic, not a Paul. When you think about waiting till 2015. I mean, one other thing we should note, it's not like the earth implodes at midnight and people really, this is a real deadline. You know, the real deadline to avoid having to pay that penalty under the law is March 31st of next year. This is the deadline to sign up on exchange and have coverage as of January 1st. This is an important day and an important deadline. We're certainly going to be looking at these numbers. But I do think the more critical day is a couple months down the road, when you have to have signed up or else you're going to have to pay a penalty on your taxes.
Let me ask you this. This is what I was thinking of. Sometimes when judging this debate, it's easy to look at the arguments against it and pick holes in the arguments. I mean, many Republicans will just say anything to make this plan seem terrible. But what if there was a world or a country where everyone pretty much wanted this? Pretty much everyone agreed with the proponents of it. What would we be saying then? What really fair-minded criticism would even a Democrat have to say is going wrong or is with the health care plan?
Well, even people who believe in the Affordable Care Act and think this is kind of the set of trade-offs, is the set of trade-offs we need to have nearly universal coverage, would say that it's been poorly run,
yeah.
Right? Would say that if you can do big fixes in the website in the space of about 2 months, maybe you could have built the website correctly from the start. Now, that's, of course, with the benefit of hindsight. The other thing I think even the most avid supporter would say is it does involve some trade-offs if you're going to have nearly universal coverage.
That's right.
Why we haven't had it. And so maybe there could have been a bigger effort to make the case that not that if you like your plan, you can keep it, but, you know, there's going to be some changes, but for the country as a whole and for many of the individuals, this is going to be a better system and a system that works. I think Americans are adults and willing to listen to arguments and understand how their own health care works. And I think, again, in retrospect, that would have been a good thing for the administration to
You're
do.
You're right, and I think it's because we're in this adversarial system, and that's fine. It's called a democracy, but that's why the amount of honesty that you're talking about wasn't achieved. That's why there was very little leveling about the costs of it beforehand. It's just selling it as an unambiguous good.
And, of course, if Republicans had not continued to oppose it with such vehemence, we wouldn't be in a system where we had this huge federal health care exchange. You know, the plan was for states to have their own exchanges and just the federal exchange to be a default. But a lot of states, mostly with Republican governors, chose not to set up their own state exchanges, and that put a big burden on the federal government that they did not anticipate having.
Jody is calling us from Montclair, New Jersey. Good morning, Jody, and welcome to WNYC.
Thanks.
Go ahead.
I struggled in the beginning, as it did everybody, but I persevered, and as of Friday, I am signed up for a plan. And I'm particularly happy because I'm with an insurer now that I have wanted to be on. I'm self-employed, and so I had wanted to be on a national association through the freelancers healthcare, and I wasn't permitted because New Jersey didn't allow anyone outside of their two, I guess, permitted plans, and Horizon has had a lock on 80% of us for many years, so that I could choose the group that I have wanted to for many years, I'm kind of excited about. And while my premium is going up about $250 a month or more, I think my overall cost will be less, and my care will certainly be better.
Did you keep trying every few days to get on? Did you give it a rest for a week? How'd you finally crack the code?
Well, I tried vigorously and often in the beginning, and then took a long hiatus, and then did some homework on the plans on my own, and then checked. You know, I did a lot of checking on. I actually talked with a broker because I was very interested in a health savings account and wanted to know tax wise if that was advantageous. And you know, there's still some question for me, you know, going silver or gold, because yes, if I do qualify for premium, the premium reduction, I think I can only do silver, but I'm not fully clear on that. And, you know, I have to say I'm someone who worked hard and advocated for health care reform for many years. And now that we're here, I'm happy, but I'm also frustrated that there's more questions that even I have as someone who's very immersed in the information. So that troubles me. And I also don't like the fact that there's been no promotion in education in New Jersey. And I personally fault Governor Christie for that, because I feel that he actually intentionally did whatever was politically possible to make this as hard as it could be for all of us to navigate in our state.
Got you. Thank you so much for the call, Jody. Pro healthcare. Little disappointed with how it's going in this specific case. Jesse from Brooklyn, welcome to WNYC. You have some confusion we could maybe clear up for you, Jesse?
Yeah, hi.
Hi.
I signed up. I went to a nonprofit. You know, they have their navigators. I signed up. I submitted all my documents, but I still haven't heard an answer from anyone as to what plan I get. Mm-hmm. So the question is, am I enrolled officially, or have I missed the deadline? And what does each deadline actually mean? I mean, if I've missed it, if I've missed, quote unquote, this deadline, whatever that means, does that mean that I don't get health care now? I'm really confused. I keep getting different stories all over the media. The deadline is today. No, the deadline's been pushed back. No, the deadline is today. I'm really confused as to, like, what deadlines mean what.
Susan.
So, Jesse, today is the deadline to sign up if you want your coverage to begin on January 1st, and you have to pay for that coverage by January 10th, and then even if you don't pay it until January 10th, you're covered retroactively to January 1st. But the concern that some people have who believe they have signed up is that there was problems in transmitting that information to the insurance company. So I think that the recommendation that officials are making is to make sure you contact, you follow up to make sure that your information did make it to the insurance company the way it was supposed to, because especially early on, if you were one of the people who signed up in October or November, there were a lot of glitches then in terms of getting the information to the insurance company.
And also there's a provision, from what I understand, that to reimburse you if you have to make the – so let's say you get sick on January 2nd and you don't know if you're covered, you could pay the expenses, and then they're saying they will – if you pay out of pocket, then you could file for reimbursements.
Right. So they're trying to accommodate the problems that they anticipate people having, but better to deal with it on the front end and try to make sure that you've got – you know, that you're all signed up and that you've paid for your initial premium, and that would be a big protection.
Yeah, which is what Jesse is trying to do, trying to get all his ducks in a row.
And
yeah, a lot of people having problems. Well, let's talk about a government program that's going super swimmingly, the NSA. So there was a panel that made 46 recommendations about the metadata phone collection. Does it violate the Fourth Amendment? The panel said some of the recommendations were establishing a public interest advocate in hearings before a FISA court, allowing companies to publish more information about the volume and nature of court orders they receive demanding information, forcing the FBI to get judicial approval before issuing national security letters. And there was a recommendation that the White House has already rejected, which is that the NSA should be run by a civilian rather than an insider. Of all the stuff that's going on with the NSA, this panel, the federal judge who said that the metadata collection might violate the Fourth Amendment, what strikes you as the most significant development on this?
Well, I think I think what we see happening is a real convergence of trying to reassess the balance between security and privacy. You know, it's like, you know, we had a period after the 9/11 attacks where agencies could do almost anything they wanted in the name of security, and it was kind of politically acceptable, and it was kept, in the case of the NSA, pretty secret. But now we've got lots of disclosures, thanks in part to Edward Snowden. We've had this judicial decision, which, of course, is going to be appealed. We've had this presidentially appointed panel come back. And it's an opportunity, I think, for President Obama, who's thought a lot about these issues, including before he was president, to try to figure out if the place where Americans want the balance to be struck has changed. I think it has. I think there's a lot of concern about the collection of data by the government, this metadata, and the effort to institute some additional safeguards. I think that moment has come. And you know what? If President Obama doesn't do it, you're going to see this pursued on the Hill in a serious way. But I think it may be something that the president decides to pursue. He has promised to come back with a speech to the nation with his thoughts on what he's going to accept from these recommendations in January. So we're going to hear something from him in pretty short order.
So let's hear from House Intelligence Committee Chairman Mike Rogers, Republican, Alabama, discussing the recommendations on ABC yesterday.
They found no violations, no unlawful activity, no scandal. None of that was found in this report. But what they said is maybe it shouldn't be with the government. Maybe it should be mandated by the government that it's held by the private companies. And I think that's a very different debate, and a debate I think we should have. And it's probably a good one.
Okay, two things about that clip. Rogers is emphasizing that the panel, no one has actually found a violation. They just found the potential for violations. Is he playing word games, or is that important distinction,
well,
Susan?
You know, it's not as though we found violation of laws. So far as I know, they didn't find that. But what we have found is that we have a system where, for instance, the government goes to this special secret court seeking subpoenas, and there's nobody arguing the other side. So that's not a violation of the law, but is that a smart way to proceed? That's more the tone of these recommendations.
Right. And we found that NASA has been snooping on UNICEF, for instance. That's not a violation of the law, but raises what is going on
right
here? Okay, so we also heard Mike Rogers there talking about who should be holding the data. Should it be the government, or should it be private companies? And there seems to be he says it's a good argument. Generally, it seems to be that a lot of the Republicans are saying the government should hold the data. A lot of the Democrats are saying private companies. You could look at that as the normal reversal of things. What are the arguments for either side?
Well, at this point, the government is holding this data for years and years and in a searchable form. And that raises a lot of privacy concerns, and more for Democrats than for Republicans. But there are two alternatives. One is to have the telephone companies hold the data.
Yeah.
They don't seem enthusiastic about that prospect. The other alternative, which might be a compromise between the two, is to establish some third institution, some third place that would hold the data. It wouldn't be a government agency. The telephone companies would send it to this third agency, and they would hold it. And then if the government needed to search the data and got the appropriate authorization to do so, they would come to there. And that, you know, it's possible that's where we'll end up.
The federal judge, who even in his decision said, this is a big decision. It's going up to a court in front of me. But he did give the government an opportunity to document what action has been taken because of this NSA metadata collection. And the government declined to do so. There are two ways to look at that. Either them saying on principle, it's not the sort of thing we want to share with the judge, and the judge said, you're going to do it in private chambers. There's no way it'll get out. The other way of looking at it is that the government doesn't have any. Any thoughts on which is the more likely scenario?
Well, you know, this is actually something we've heard the head of that presidential commission talk about, Mike Morrell, who's the former acting CIA director. And what he said was they did not, this presidential commission didn't find evidence that this metadata collection had stopped an attack. But he did also say that doesn't mean they didn't find it had value. And some people in the intelligence community argue that it does have value. But it is true that so far the administration and the defenders have not come forward and said there were three instances where a bombing in a public place in the United States was prevented because of our ability to tap this data.
President Obama is a constitutional scholar. You mentioned he thought about these issues even before he became president. He's constitutionally a fairly progressive guy if you look at his public statements and his voting records. Why do you think he's sticking to this program?
You know, I think he had one perspective when he was a senator and when he was teaching law school before he became president. But one thing that does happen when you become president, your perspective shifts. And on this and on other issues, he has followed, in some cases, the policies laid out by the George W. Bush administration in ways you wouldn't have expected him to do so. Your responsibilities as president may be different. The pressures and cross currents that you feel may be different. But, you know, I do think, and maybe this is Pollyannish, I do think this is a moment, an inflection moment, where it may be possible to kind of craft a new path that recognizes that we live in a dangerous world, but also that these constitutional protections and privacy protections are so important to Americans and such a fundamental part of who we are.
Yeah, there was it Ron Suskind's book called The 1% Doctrine? The basic premise was that Dick Cheney said, if there's even a 1% chance of being attacked, we have to take every action against that. And I think, for instance, the constitutional lawyers who were on that panel that made a lot of recommendations criticizing the NSA wouldn't have that mindset. But once you're in that seat, once you're the president, a 1%, a 0.1% doctrine might be a compelling enough reason to kind of go against the things you always talked about when you were a constitutional law professor.
And, you know, you mentioned earlier that we live in a democracy, which is sometimes quite messy. But this is an issue for the debate in a democracy and the people deciding kind of where they would put that. Is it 1%? Is it 5%? I mean, where does it fit for Americans to be willing to put up with intelligence gathering, even on Americans, even on U.S. soil? Where is the line that we would draw with that? It's sort of like figuring out the trade-offs in healthcare. It's not easy, but, you know, we should talk about it.
My last question, or at least line of questioning, what is the first question the president got in his press conference on Friday? Is this the worst year of your presidency? Look, okay, that's, you know, keeping score and what they do in Washington. But why is at least the idea behind that question, or is the idea behind that question, does that have any actual real-world importance in your estimation?
I think he had a pretty terrible year, especially if you can compare it to the expectations and the hopes that were raised when he got reelected, which was just a year ago, let's remember, that he won election with more than 50% of the vote. I thought he could have made a much more energetic defense of his year. You know what? The economy is coming back. It's not perfect, but we're clearly in a recovery, and it seems to be getting stronger. We've got a chemical deal with Syria. We've reached an interim nuclear deal with Iran. I mean, there are some things that happened this year that he could point to with pride, but it's all been overshadowed, I think, by the problems with the Affordable Care Act. The Gallup organization sent out a headline this morning. Let's see if I've got it right here. It says, "Health care law seen as Obama's biggest achievement, failure. and you know what? I think that's about right. And it overshadowed so much else that happened this year.
Yeah. And it did seem in his press conference that the point he was really emphasizing was, I need a vacation. I got to go to Hawaii, guys. Well, I guess we all do. Thanks a lot, Susan Page of USA Today. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Mike.
From the national to the local, Ozzie Pebara will be talking about local politics. Stay with us.